it's good to have an understanding of the history of writing if you're going to teach a child to read, so you understand the basic principles involved. The earliest form of writing that human beings used is known as pictography. That is, the cavemen drew pictures on the walls of the caves and of their caves, and in pictography, the symbols looked like the things they represented. I mean, a man looked like a man, a tree looked like a tree, an animal looked like an animal, a bow and arrow looked like a bow and arrow. So you didn't have to go to school to learn to read pictographs. But as civilization became more complex, the scribes had to begin drawing pictures of things that did not lend themselves to depiction. I mean, it's easy enough to draw a picture of a man and an animal, but how do you draw pictures of ideas? How do you draw pictures of ideas such as good and evil, right and wrong? How do you draw pictures of such concepts as method or system or an idea like determined? How do you draw a picture of determined? You can't. So what do? You draw a picture and you tell everybody this stands for determined. It doesn't look like determined, but it's determined. And so we call that form of writing ideographs. And Chinese is a form of ideographic writing. In other words, the symbols do not look like the things they represent. So somebody has to tell you what they all stand for. And the Chinese developed thousands of such little symbols, none of which look like anything they represented. And of course, somebody had to tell you what they meant. Well, around two, and of course, the problem with that type of writing is that it was very difficult to memorize thousands of symbols, and because it was so easy to forget. And so literacy was restricted to a small group of priests and scholars and scribes who made it their life's work, you know, memorizing these thousands of symbols and being able to use them. Well, around 2,000 years B.C., somebody made a remarkable discovery. Somebody living in the area of what is now northern Israel or southern Lebanon, we think. Somebody made a remarkable discovery. Somebody discovered that all of human language, everything we say, is composed of a small number of irreducible speech sounds. I mean, supposing you take all of the languages spoken by human beings all over the world and just analyze the different speech sounds in that language, they would come up to a relatively small number of sounds. For example, in the English language, how many irreducible speech sounds do you think there are in English? Does anybody here know? Yes? Correct. You read my book, is that it? Yeah, you know, there are only 44 sounds in English, believe it or not. And yet we have a 26-letter alphabet. I'll tell you how we got there. But in any case, this individual said to himself, well, instead of using this system of writing composed of thousands of symbols, none of which look like anything they represent, why don't I create a small set of symbols to stand for the irreducible speech sounds of the language, and then we will have a very simple way of transcribing the spoken word directly into written form and an equally simple way of translating the written word back into its spoken form. And so the first alphabet was invented. Well, as I said, the English language has 44 sounds, but we have a 26-letter alphabet. Now, how did that come about? Why don't we have a 44-letter alphabet? That would make much more sense. Well, what happened was this. When the Romans conquered the British Islands, they imposed the Latin alphabet on the people who lived there. And the people who lived there adapted the Latin alphabet, which stands for the sounds of Latin, not English. They adapted the Latin alphabet to their needs. So if you're going to use somebody else's 26 letters to stand for your 44 sounds, what's going to happen? Well, you're going to have to make some accommodations. Some of your letters are going to have to stand for more than one sound, and some of your sounds are going to have to be represented by more than one letter. For example, our typically English sound is represented by TH. The SH is represented by SH. The CH is represented by CH. Now, in other alphabets, there may be just one symbol standing for those sounds. As a matter of fact, in Russian, which has, I believe, 33 letters, they have a symbol that stands for SH. Actually, SH. They have a symbol just for that. And so we've had to do with our alphabet. Now, regardless of the difficulties that we have with the English alphabetic system, because we use a 26-letter alphabet, nevertheless, we've managed to produce the world's greatest literature. So our alphabetic system has worked very well. And, of course, the simplest way to teach an alphabetic writing system is a three-step methodology. First, you teach the child to recognize the letters of the alphabet, and that's easily done through the alphabet song, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. Now, there's another song in which it works out, they say W, X, Y, and Z. There is no letter and Z. And don't shortchange W. W has three syllables. W. Don't try to squeeze it into two syllables and say W, X, Y, and Z. You see, they steal a syllable from the W and then they put it, and then they put an and there. Just say A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P, Q, R, S, T, U, V, W, X, Y, Z. You see. Now, kids generally will learn the alphabet orally before they learn it visually, because it's like a song, you know. So it'll take time before they can, associate the name with the letter itself, and then if they learn it in proper order, then if you mix it up, then they have a little trouble. So it takes a little time. But then the second step is to teach the child the sounds that the letters stand for. And the way that was done for generations, for hundreds of years, in ancient Rome, for example, was to teach the child the letter sounds in their consonant vowel combinations. For example, they would drill the child, bay, be, bi, bo, bu, may, me, my, mo, mu, ab, eb, ib, ob, ub, am, em, im, um. Now, the purpose of that drill was to make sure that the child developed an automatic association between letters and sounds, so that when the child saw these syllabic units, the child would stimulate a sound, a movement of the mouth. In other words, the child's not looking at a picture and thinking, what does this say? The child is developing an automatic association between letters and sounds. That's the heart of teaching anyone to read phonetically. That's the proper association. And that's the association that the schools do not want to teach. They want to prevent the children from developing that association because they want the child to be constantly looking at the word as a little picture. You see, you can't look at English words as if they're little pictures because they don't look like anything. But yeah, that's the way our schools do it. And then once you teach the child, once the child develops that automatic association between letters and sounds, then of course the child then can sound out words and little phrases and then sentences and little stories. And that's the proper sequence. Recognize the letters of the alphabet, teach the letter sounds, and then teach reading, teach vocabulary and all of that. I don't also want to point out one other thing about the alphabet, which is very interesting. Nobody really knows how the alphabet originated. We do know that when God created Adam, Adam could speak. So he had the power of language as soon as he was created. Why? Because God wanted to be able to communicate with Adam. He wanted to be able to communicate with this individual who was made in his image, you see. Now, it's interesting that Moses, who was brought up by an Egyptian princess and educated by the Egyptians, was probably taught to read Egyptian with Egyptian hieroglyphics. But then when Moses went up to Mount Sinai and he got the Ten Commandments, and remember, God wrote the Ten Commandments with his finger. God used alphabetic writing. He didn't write the Ten Commandments in Egyptian hieroglyphics. He wrote it in alphabetic writing. Who taught God the alphabet? An interesting question, huh? So the ancient Hebrews believed that the alphabet was divinely inspired, that it was a gift from God. And, they say that it was invented by some businessman in Phoenicia. They have no proof of that, because the Phoenicians left no copies of anything. So how do we know that? This is what historians who don't want to recognize God, try to interpret things. But the most important development as a result of the invention of the alphabet was the Holy Scripture. That was the first important work that was made available. Why? Because God wanted to speak to his people, wanted to communicate with his creatures, with the people he had created, and the alphabet had to be invented so that God's word could be put down on paper accurately and precisely. Accuracy and precision are hallmarks of the alphabetic writing system. That's not so of hieroglyphics or of pictographs. Pictographs have to be interpreted. You see a series of pictures and you interpret them. Ideographs can be misinterpreted, because there's nothing that tells you exactly what that says. But alphabetic writing is a direct, precise, accurate transcription of the spoken language. Let me give you an illustration. For example, you've often seen the symbol. We use pictographs and ideographs all over the world these days, you know, in airports. For example, if you want to go to the restrooms, you look at the one will have a somebody in pants on the door, and the other will have somebody in a skirt. Well, now, since women wear pants these days, they might go into the wrong room. You see how ambiguous all of that can be. But you've all seen the circle with the cigarette and the slash mark through it. Now, when you see that, you say, oh, I can't smoke, I mustn't smoke, I may not smoke. Smoking not allowed, smoking prohibited, nicht rauchen, défense de fumer, no fumar. In other words, language is used to interpret the ideograph. And you could interpret it in any number of ways, and it's all correct. Every one of those is correct. But the sign that reads no smoking is a transcription of two English words, no, N-O, smoking, S-M-O-K-I-N-G. And it says nothing else. It does not say nicht rauchen. It does not say smoking forbidden. It's an accurate, precise translation of two English words, you see. Transcription, I mean. In any case, that's why alphabetic writing is so different from ideographic writing. Now, in teaching children to read, I basically use the same method that has been used for thousands of years very successfully. Remember, the ancients were far more literate than our people today. Our founding fathers are far more literate than our people today. If you read the newspapers as they were written back then, if you read the Federalist Papers, if you read the Declaration of Independence, you realize that those documents were written for the ordinary American, not for university doctorates. They were written for farmers. And in those days, farmers could read that well. As a matter of fact, the other day I was at an auction, and this friend of mine bought two books on how to farm, published back in the 1850s. Two thick books on how to become a farmer. Well, that was written on such a high plane. You say, farmers are going to read this? Of course. Farmers were able to read very good literature. Fantastic vocabulary. Beautifully written. Because the farmers in those days knew how to read. Today it's all written, it's all dumbed down into one syllable words. You know, like, get on your tractor. Pull the switch. Go. That sort of thing. But in any case, my purpose is to make sure that every child develops a phonetic ability to read. Because once you have your phonics down, then the sky's the limit. Then it's up to the child to develop his or her own reading ability by just reading more books. There are a lot of kids today who are taught to read by phonics and yet have very poor ability to read multisyllabic words because they're given nothing challenging to read. You see, so you want to give your children books like the Dickens novels, which are fantastic vocabulary, or Edgar Allan Poe or something like that, rich in vocabulary, multisyllabic words, so that they can develop the ability to read very well. Anyway, what I do is I start the child out first. I decided to start with teaching the short A. First you have to, we assume the child has already learned the alphabet. Now we're going to start teaching the letter sound. So the first sound we teach is the short A, the A. Short A is A. And then I teach that short A in conjunction with five consonants. The M, which stands for M. The N, which stands for N. The S, which stands for S. The T, which stands for T. And the X, which stands for KS, KS, KS. It really is a combination of KS. But the reason why I chose those letters was because I wanted to get the child into reading words as early as possible, into meaning units. And so you teach the child that if they put the A and the M together, they get am, am. If they put the A and the N together, they get a, n, an. If you give them the a and the s, you get as, as. You get the, with the T, you get at, at, at. With the X, you get ax, ax, you see. So, in the very first lesson, the child not only learns the short A and five consonant letters, but also that by using those letters, he or she can already read five words. Perfectly good words in English. And what you do is you show how these words, the child uses these words every day, like am, I am going to the store. Or he is eating an apple. Or she is as tall as he is. Or we are at the store. Or dad has an axe. Now, if the child doesn't know what an axe is, if you can show him one, that's fine. Or if not, just show him a picture of an axe so he'll know what an axe is. But you don't use the picture to teach the child how to read, simply just to identify, teach him what the particular item you're talking about is. Well, then we take the same letters and we put them in front of those, the few words that we've already learned, those five words. We take the S and we put it in front of am and we get s-am. We take the M and put it in front of and we get man. We take the, then we introduce the letter H. Incidentally, all of the instructions are in the back. Everything I'm saying to you is in the back of the book. So we introduce the letter H. H stands for, see, that's an irreducible speech sound. These are irreducible speech sounds. You see. So that's how they were able to do it. They were able to isolate these different sounds of the language and use a letter to stand for that specific sound. That's the whole idea behind alphabetic writing and why it works so beautifully and so well, because you can do so much more with so much less. Only 26 letters for everything. That's pretty ingenious. Anyway, so in front of as gives you has. In front of at gives you at. And in front of axe gives you axe. And of course, you teach vocabulary at the same time. You teach your child what a tax is, because that child will be paying it for the rest of his or her life, especially under the Clinton administration. Hopefully that won't last more than 4 years. Anyway, well, in lesson three, we can already put those words that we have learned into sentences. So we have, and we're developing spelling families, am, sam, and, man, as, has, at, hat, axe, tax. That's the way you learn to spell, by the way, is by learning spelling families. Sam sat. Period. Learn about punctuation. Sam has an axe. And you learn about punctuation there, too. Period. Capitalization of a proper name or the beginning of a sentence. And usually the children can get to lesson three in one session. That's been my experience. But take as much time as you need. There's no rule that says you have to that you have to accomplish this in 10 minutes or 15 minutes or a half hour. You just go at your own speed. And then we teach the rest of the consonants with the short A. Now, when we keep expanding the spelling families, we add the D, add. By now we have add, had, dad, sad, tad, mad, am, ham, dam, sam, an, man, dan, tan, as, has, and then we have W-A-S. We put a little box around it because even though it is in the as, has spelling family, it's not pronounced was. It's pronounced was or was, depending on what part of the country you're from. How do they say it up in Maine? You say was? Was. You are wuzzies. Okay, was. Anyway, now the child will learn to say was or was simply because he knows that was is not a word. You know, he's not going to say he was going home, you know. He was, so he knows what was. I've never had a youngster yet who was unable to learn the irregular words. You know why? Because 99% of them, if pronounced the way they're spelled, would make no sense. They're not words, so they don't have any problem with these. So we keep expanding the sentences, you know, and adding more letters. And finally, when we're done, then we give them plenty, we give the child plenty of review. We teach the CK. It's another form of K, is the CK writing. Spelling form, the word and then we give them this drill of every possible three-letter combination with the short A. The purpose of the drill is to make sure that the child develops that automatic association. The reason why you want an automatic association is that the child doesn't have to stop and think, what does it say? See, when it's automatic, then it, you know, it's easy. It's easy. He doesn't have to think about it. That's what we call automatic. That's why it becomes automatic. Then we teach the rest of the short vowels. A, e, a, uh. And we teach them in contrasting spelling family as bad, bad, bid, bod, bud, bag, bag, big, bog, bug, etc. Some children have problems with the I and the E, particularly in the South. In certain parts of the South, they'll say, he writes with a pen, you know. And you have to convince them that there's a difference between a pen and a pen. You know, there's a pen that you stick somebody with, and then there's a pen that you write with. So you have to say that it's not pen, it's pen. It's interesting that they'll say pen, but then the rest of the short, they'll get hen all right. They don't call a hen a hen, you see, but they'll call a pen a pen, you see. But once they know that there's a difference in the spelling, you might be able to help them change their pronunciation. But I like the way they speak in the South, and so I don't hold that against them. And we keep building the sentences, three-letter combinations, drill, etc. We introduce the QU, qua, quit, the quip, quick, etc. Then in lesson 34, no, not a lesson, lesson 21, we introduce the TH sound. Now, up until now, we haven't used the word the. We only use words based on the letters that the children know. And our sentences are made up only of the letters that the children know. So we don't put in words like the and say, oh, they have to learn it as a sight word. Now, there's no such thing as a sight word in English. All of our words stand for the spoken language, and all of the letters represent the spoken language, even if they are one-of-a-kind words, like, say, the word eye, E-Y-E. That's not a picture of two eyes with a nose in the middle. E-Y-E stands for the spoken eye, and the reason why it's E-Y-E is because we've got three eyes in English. You've got first-person I, like I am here. You've got I, sir, A-Y-E. And then you have E-Y-E for the I that you see through. So there's a reason why we have different spellings for the same sound, so that when you see the word in print, you know exactly what is meant. If I just stood here and said I, you wouldn't know which I was talking about, unless I spelled it. If I said E-Y-E, you would know, oh, that I, you see. So it helps to have different spelling forms for the same sound in English so that the written language is easily and readily recognized and identified. So when we introduce TH stands for, we not only teach the, but we teach that, than, the, them, then, thin, this, bath, math, path, beth, with, etc. So they learn a whole lot of words with the TH. Now, thin is different from that. You see, there are two. There's a hard TH and a soft TH. You say that, and you say think. You don't say think. You say think. So there's a hard TH and a soft TH, and the children pronounce the words the way they're spoken, you see. Because the written language is a representation of the spoken equivalent. Now we move into learning the blends. We teach the consonant blends first. We teach the final consonant blends, such as... before we get to that, in lesson 38, the children already know enough so that they can read these two-syllable short vowel words such as box top, you see, which are composed of really two words, box top, zigzag, hot dog, catnip, tomcat, gallop. There are two syllables, but they're not words by themselves, gal, lop, you see. But they can read those syllables, because they've, when we gave them the drill, we had a lot of nonsense syllables. Now, the reason why you teach nonsense syllables is that they can read whatever is there, whatever the letters say. And, of course, many of these nonsense syllables will later turn up in as syllables in words. So there's nothing is wasted here. Everything that is taught here is useful for the rest of that child's life. Nothing has to be unlearned. There are two no-nos in education. Never teach anything that has to later be unlearned. It's the worst thing you can try to do is unlearn something that you've been drumming into somebody's head. The second thing is don't let a child develop a bad habit. In other words, teach the child the correct way to begin with. In the schools these days, they're teaching something called invented spelling. You know what invented spelling is? Write any way you want, anything you want, in any way you want. So the child will spend a year or two holding the pen in the wrong way, writing the letters in the wrong way, and spelling in the wrong way. Now they say, oh, well, the children will automatically correct themselves later on. Doesn't happen. You're letting your children develop bad habits. Do you know what it's like to try to undo a bad habit? I taught a class of children with learning disabilities and behavioral problems, all sorts of things. Once they're using four fingers, and I will discuss this in the writing part, once they're using four fingers to write, you'll never get them back to. I mean, these habits, they're stuck with them for life. And it all starts at ages 4, 5, and 6. So as parents, make sure that you're doing things the right way to begin with. And avoid the problems of having to try to undo bad habits. And of course, never teach anything that has to be unlearned. The way they do that, the reason why they say they do that is because they want to make things easy. Take a little more time. It may be a little more difficult to learn it, to do it the right way to begin with, but at least you're learning something that you're going to be using forever, and you don't have to unlearn anything, which is a pain. Anyway, and also you develop vocabulary. For example, when you come to the word nitwit, just tell the child what a nitwit is. There's nothing wrong with that, because part of learning the language is learning vocabulary. And there are a lot of these small words that the child may not be familiar with. So it's children love words. Remember, they spent 3 years learning the language. And they're experts. Their ears are very finely tuned, and they're always curious. I remember talking to a little four-year-old the other day, and I used the word avoid, and she says, what does avoid mean? She wanted to know what avoid means. So what does avoid mean? I have, remember. Well, it means, trying to get away from something. Avoid. Anyway, then we get into, don't be afraid to use dictionaries. Dictionaries are very useful books. Then we get into the blends, the consonant blends. For example, which ones do I start with? Well, the ND, and, bond, fund, pent, rent, NT, NK, rink. See how they blend? Ink, rink. These are consonant blends. They blend together. Now, a consonant, a combination like SH is known as a consonant digraph. It's not a blend. It's two consonant letters that stand for one sound, and we call that a digraph. Digraph, you see, two drawings that stand for one sound. Sh, it's not sh, it's sh, you see. But blend like tank, you have tank, you see, or test, test, you see. And it's very important to have the proper sequence of letters. You take a word like ask, There are a lot of kids who say, ask me no questions, particularly among, it seems to be the way they speak now in the ghettos, among blacks, they'll say, ask me. You know, ask me no question. I asked him something. Well, if they're taught to read by the look-say method, they see three letters. They don't care which sequence they're in. A-K-S, A-S-K, it's all the same as far as they're concerned. But if you know that the word is A-S-K, ask, that's the way you've got to pronounce it. You must pronounce the word in the same sequence in which the letters are written. That's it. So we teach them all, we go through all of these self. You see, these blends are articulated so quickly that we think sometimes we're hearing just one letter. But you have to look at each letter and hear it. Self, etc. Then we have review. We always have review. Then we get into the consonant, initial consonant blends. That is, consonant blends at the beginnings of words like flat, fla, at, flat, or drill, ill, drill, dr, or st, or fr, or gr, or sl, that sort of thing, or pr, prince, etc., sk, st. And we have a review of all of those consonant blends. And finally, we get into the long vowels. Now, the reason why we save the long vowels for the end is because there are many different spelling families in the long vowels. For example, take long A. There are many ways to say long A, which is A. First of all, there's simple A, as in April. Apron. A-P-R-O-N. Then you have ate, like I ate an apple, A-T-E, that is vowel, long A, consonant, silent E. We call it silent E. You just say A, consonant, E. That's the spelling form. So you have, first we teach that, because that's the most common spelling form for long A. Ace, face, lace, pace, page, gape, gate, wade, etc. That's A, consonant, E. That's the most common form. Then, we also write long A, A-I, as in ale, aid, fail, pain, vein. As a matter of fact, we have three veins in English. You have V-A-N-E, which is your weather vein. You have V-A-I-N, which is, oh, he's so vain. You know, he's always looking in the mirror, thinks he's the best-looking person in town. Vain. And vein, the vein in your arm, V-E-I-N. There's no A in sight. But E-I is one of our ways of writing long A. So we have the A-I. Another way we write long A is A-Y, as in day, may, ray, pay, P-A-Y, pay, ray, R-A-Y, etc. Another way we write long A is E-Y, as in obey, gray, they. Another way, of course, is the E-I, as in vein or veil. Another way we write long A in English is E-I-G-H. Four letters that stand for one sound. E-I-G-H stands for A. That's all it is. If you put a T at the end, you get eight. The number eight, you see. So you're teaching your child all the different spelling forms of one sound in English. And as I explained, the reason why we have these different spellings is because so many of our words sound alike. Eight and eight. I ate 8 donuts. You see, 8 and 8. Words sound exactly alike, but they mean two different things, and the spellings indicate that very nicely. The same is true of all the other long vowels. And then also we have other vowel sounds in English. You know that we have 20 vowel sounds in English and only 5 vowel letters? What about ow? What about oi? You see, those are all different vowel sounds. All sorts of English. But you see, that's the beauty of English. We have a very wide range of vowel sounds. The other day, something of mine was published in Poland, in Polish. Or it wasn't by me, it was about me. And you've never seen consonants like they've got in Polish. I don't know if any of you have ever heard Polish, but you ought to see. They might have 5 consonants in a row. It's just incredible. It's a very guttural consonant language. English, on the other hand, is a beautiful blend of vowels and consonants, a very wide vowel range, which is why English is such a beautiful language when it comes to poetry and, plays, drama, etc. Now, you might say, well, E-I-G-H, that's terrible. How could we do that, you know, to our poor kids? Well, have you ever studied French? How do you say O in French? You know the word for water in French? What is the word for water in French? E-A-U. O, de l'eau. Un verre d'eau. D'E-A-U. There's E-A-U to stand for O, and there isn't even an O in the word. So don't complain about English. You know, every language has its problems or its difficulties. But our alphabetic system is a wonderful alphabetic system once you know it. And this book teaches the whole system. And once you're finished with it, you know our English alphabetic system, and then what you do is read. And what I recommend to parents is that they give their children good material to read so that they can develop their reading and enjoy it, because once you've mastered the English alphabetic system, the entire depository of our written language is available to you. You've got the key to the knowledge of 1,000 years of written English. It's a marvelous, marvelous gift to give to your children. And this book does it all very simply, very easily. I do have audio tapes with the book for those parents who feel that they don't know phonics enough and they do want that additional support. You don't need the tapes, but some may need the tapes. So I produce the tapes just for those who might need them. Now, are there any questions? That's basically the what it is. It's not difficult at all. What I'll do is I'll take up the writing and the arithmetic part of it at the... When does that happen? Let's see. We have a lunch break, and then we have... Oh, yeah, at 3:30, I'll take up the writing, and because you've got to teach the children to write at the same time. But as I say, this is the simplest, easiest way to teach your child to read compared to whatever else is on the market. There are some programs on the market where you've got to take a course. There are some programs which stress rules. You've got to memorize 50 rules before you can read anything. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in memorizing rules. You learn the rules implicitly in learning the spelling forms. And you'll become a good speller at the same time. Well, thank you very much, and I'll see you later on. I'll be downstairs if you'd like to purchase the book. Thank you.